Hello and welcome to Study Hub, the podcast that aims to give you the tips and tricks to help you do your best in the Leaving Cert. My name is Maura Fay and I'm your host for RTE Study Hub. Today we are kicking off with Gaeilge, because you never know when you might need your cúpla focal.
Detective Moran, you're Irish, ain't you?
Yeah.
Well, I see you speak Gaelic then, yeah?
Well, we all speak Irish in Ireland, yeah. Mm. We have to learn it from the age of 5 to like 18.
So we've got a suspect in there from Connemara, right, who only speaks Gaelic, yeah? So I want you to lead this interrogation.
So,
still don't feel like talking, eh? Detective Morania speaks Gaelic just like you.
Dígwich.
Dés Murhuch.
Covil tu a Dagoni.
Gaelic.
Bawat lat Uctorocha.
Uctorocha?
Bawat lat Uctorocha.
Answer the question!
That's comedy trio Foyle, Arms and Hogg there. Joining me to go through Irish Paper 1 is Muintir Shane DePoira with the Dublin Academy of Education. Shane, what is the format of the paper?
So for Irish Paper 1, we start off with the Clústuiscint. So you'll go in, you'll sit down, you'll get your exam handed to you. Nowadays, the writing paper is actually attached to the exam for Irish Paper 1. So you'll get your Clústuiscint and then you'll have your essay at the back of it. But you begin with the Clústuiscint, which will take about 23 minutes in total, give or take. Sometimes 22, sometimes 24, but 23 is a nice average. Once that is finished, you move on to the only written question we have on Irish Paper 1. This causes a lot of confusion, a lot of bother. People around mock time get a little bit stressed and anxious when they don't see any more questions, but it's just a creative writing piece. So we have the option of 5 essays, 2 short stories, a debate or a speech, and you must choose one topic in total. So that is 9 options and you have to choose one.
How long do you have for the written question and how should you approach it?
Okay, so for Irish Paper 1, time is not the enemy. We have, give or take, 1 hour and 50 minutes to write. It should be a minimum of 2 pages, but typically if you're looking for a H1, you're probably going to write about a 4-page answer. So how would I approach it? First of all, I would have a look at all the questions. Students would know at this point what questions they have been preparing for. Typically, in my experience from correcting the Leaving Cert exam, I would see very few students attempt the second section, section B, which is the short story. It would be, you know, very, very unusual to see, you know, more than 1 or 2 of them in your batch of exams you're correcting. The majority of students will attempt the essay and a couple then will try the debate or the speech at the end. So pick a topic that you have looked at in school, that you have practiced, that you have notes on, that you have information on. And before you go writing your exam, before you go writing your essay, I would take a minute, take a deep breath. This is not like many other subjects when you're against the clock. Far from it here. You've loads of time. Plan what you're, you know, going to write. Have a look at the question. See what suits you. And then put pen to paper and write down what are the topics that suit you. What should you look at? And a little essay plan together. That'll make a huge difference.
Do you have any predictions of topics of essays that are likely to come up?
Yeah, I have a couple that I'd look at. But even before I look at the predictions and stuff, I probably should have mentioned there previously that the way you actually practice, you know, at home and study for the exam is probably even more important than, you know, what even comes up. Because a big thing for me is when I'm looking at it for students when they're getting ready for this exam is when you're writing in Irish, the majority of students, and you know, this won't help probably students who are fluent in Irish, they probably don't need my help if they're fluent in Irish already,
yeah.
But students who are not fluent in Irish will think through English and try to write in Irish. And we don't get an awful lot of practice of that. There is no translation question in our exam. So I would tell students to have a practice of that. Like, you know what you want to write in Irish. You have an idea of what it is in English. So make sure you're practicing, you know, having your thoughts down in English on a bit of paper and practice translating them back into Irish, because that's essentially what this is. And the next thing I would say as well is, when you're going to do this, avoid going kind of off topic. If you've learnt a fantastic paragraph, you know, about the life of a young person, but that doesn't appear in the exam, you know, there's no point slotting it into the essay, because if anything is irrelevant, you won't get marks. Like when I look at the marking scheme, it's 100 marks, which is 16.6% of the exam. 80 of the 100 marks go for spelling and grammar.
Okay.
So it's really important that the quality of your Irish is there. Not even the quantity of it, just the quality of it. And that you are writing good, accurate Irish. So make sure your stuff is topical, suited to the question. 15 marks is going for the subject. However, if your subject isn't relevant, it could also impact your Irish grade. I always get a question, can I just write the wrong essay and get 80 out of 100? If you write the wrong essay on purpose, you'll get 0 out of 100.
Okay.
So that doesn't work. So you have to be on point. You kind of have to be a little bit interesting as well. So yeah, they would be a couple of things I'd be looking at even before I look at the, you know, the predictions. When it comes to predictions, look, the paper typically sets sometime between November and kind of the end of January, typically. No one knows. There's probably a dark room somewhere, not alone, they set the paper. But we're guessing that's, you know, when it's set. Because of that, you're looking at things that are in the news, current affairs around that time. So some of the things that I have looked at with my own class this year have been the Irish language. Obviously, it's an Irish as the subject. The Irish language is going to be important. It does come up a lot, and NECAP have blown up all over social media. So, you know, they've kind of made it trendy and vogue again. So I would definitely have something looked at about the Irish language. We've had our first general election in a long time as well. We've also had an election in America. I would definitely be looking at something to do with politics. The education system is another topic this year. It hasn't appeared in 2 or 3 years. It's all over the news at the moment because we've a whole host of changes coming in the next 2 or 3 years. So they would be three topics that I will be having a look at that have been topical this year. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are other ones then you can throw your eye over, like things like the environment or technology, kind of are cyclical. They come up, you know, every couple of years. So they would be kind of three or four titles that I'd be looking at. But there's no guarantee. I always get asked, is there a magic list we can tick off? Like, there is no list. Just current affairs is what you're trying to prepare.
Okay. You say that, you're telling me that in order to get a H1, you need to have a bit of flair with your language. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So like I often say to students who are struggling, because look, H1s are absolutely fantastic, but you're targeting then like, what, 5-10% of the country. So to get your H1, you have to stand out from the crowd. So it's the perfect mixture of having good quality Irish, your shanuckle being in your essay, not having a kind of nice phrases. Not only that, a small thing that a lot of students would make mistakes on when they struggle with Irish would be their ravuckle, which are your prepositions. I'm probably boring you now with all the grammar talk.
No, this is where the marks are.
Yeah, your air, your de, your do, your le. Like making sure you've got the right preposition with the right verb, that's quite impressive. A lot of students don't understand that because it doesn't really matter as much. I find in English there's a couple of awkward ones. Like I'll use a basic example here. Like when you're listening to music, it's always eisht le kiol. And, you know, if you translate that, it's listen with music. It makes no sense. So students sometimes struggle to get the right preposition linked to the right verb. So that would be important as well. Your Tishil Ginnaduk, everyone's favourite, the Tishil Ginnaduk. So getting your I's and your E's or your shavus in the right place and having good quality examples in the right place for your H1.
Yeah.
For a H3, because a lot of people will be very happy with a H3 in Irish Paper 1.
Definitely, yeah.
What I would say to them is, focus on the quality and not the quantity. I would say, like, typically in an essay, I'd expect to see 6 paragraphs. That's what I would look for, an opening and a closing, and you'd have 4 discussion paragraphs in the middle. I would say to some students, you know, if you're struggling and you find Irish language difficult, if you find it hard to kind of get accurate Irish on a page, reduce that. Cut it back to 5 paragraphs, have an opening and a closing, discuss 3 topics in the middle, and focus on the quality of your language. Simple, short sentences that make sense do far better than long-winded sentences full of errors that I can't really understand. So I always say keep it short and simple.
Talking of paragraphs, another tip you have is don't leave it till the end to read over your essay.
Oh, yeah.
Take it paragraph by paragraph. Talk to me about
that. Yeah, so look, with the best will in the world, you tell someone at the very end of your exam, you're tired, maybe emotional, who knows, but you're tired anyway. And I'll say, will you sit there and read over your work for another 10 minutes? I know I'd find it difficult to do that, so I don't know how a 17 or 18 year old would do it. So I believe that students should read over their work as they do it. We said that they have an hour and 50 minutes. They're not stuck for time. So I would write my paragraph in 10 or 12 minutes. I would then put the pen down and I would actually read over that paragraph before I go on to the next one, because you're fresh, your mind is working a little bit better. And then at the end of the exam, you only have to motivate yourself to read over the final paragraph of your essay because you've checked the work the whole time as you've been going along. And I think you'll find, you know, way more mistakes doing that as opposed to kind of skimming over it at the end. And there's another one I have, it's an unusual one. So I sometimes tell people, if you're reading, right, and you're reading something, your brain will trick you if you're just reading it and you're not reading it out loud. I find anyway with students, if I get them to read something, I could put a mistake in and they won't spot it. And then I ask them to read it out loud and they go, oh, there's a mistake in that. So if you can say it quietly to yourself as you're reading it. Now, I don't need you to have a big loudspeaker in the back of the exam hall shouting it out. But say it quietly to yourself and you might notice an air that should be an on or a let that should be a do, and you might spot the mistakes a little bit quicker. That's what I find works for me and works for my students anyway.
Yeah, because that's the thing with the language is like, if you say something kind of out loud or speak it in your head, you're like, oh no, that shouldn't be a B, that should be a H there. And
yeah,
that, you know.
So, exactly, yeah.
Just on the Klusgeschkunde, any advice on how to handle that?
Yeah, so what I would say is on the morning of the exam, I see people with their head buried in their notes for 5 different essays. I often wonder, like, how much are they really taking in with 5 essays in their hands and panicking. I would tell students for the Klusgeschkunde, half an hour before you go into the exam. The exam should start at 9:30. Sitting outside the exam hall, put in your earphones. Stick on last year's Clues Dishkent. You can get the script on examinations.ie and just listen to it. Don't do any questions. Just listen to some Irish. For some students, they may not have done a Clues Dishkent from the time they finished school in mid-May to the time the exams are starting. You're 3 weeks later. You haven't listened to any Irish. So I would stick on a Clues Dishkent. I would listen to it. I would follow the script along and just get yourself warmed up. When you get the paper as well, Section A is the easiest section. It's typically two kind of short bulletins. What I would tell people is I wouldn't be rushing to translate all the questions in Section A because they're typically the easiest ones. So maybe have a look at Section B and C because as the tape progresses, you have less and less time between each section to try figure out what you're looking for. I did an experiment with my class in school. We did two Clues Dishkent. I did one where I told them exactly what the questions meant and one where I didn't help them at all with the questions. And the results were dramatically better for the Clues Dishkent where they knew what the questions meant. So getting in and writing down what you need to do, is it what aim, what objective, what person, will definitely help them look for the right information.
Really great advice there. Thank you so much. Gurmeet Magat, Shane Dupar. And Shane has more Irish exam tips on his TikTok page, which you'll find at SDP Gaeilge online. So definitely check that out.
Gurmeet Magat.
Okay. Now let's turn our attention to geography.
We're going to be doing tariffs on pharmaceuticals in order to bring our pharmaceutical industry back. We don't make anything here in terms of drugs, medical drugs, different types of drugs that you need. Medicines. It's in other countries, largely made in China, a lot of it made in Ireland. Ireland was very smart. We love Ireland. But we're going to have that.
You may wonder why we're playing a clip of Donald Trump. Well, let me tell you, geography at Leaving Cert level can cover everything from coastal erosion to volcanoes to colonization and economic geography, including terms such as tariffs. We're delighted that Andy Leavis, geography teacher at Middleton College in County Cork, is back with us this year and joins us from our Cork TV studios. Andy, can we go through the exam? What is on the menu here?
Good afternoon, Maura. So the exam itself is split into a number of different sections. The first section is on short questions, and on the short questions you can have a number of different topics. Ranging from physical to regional to map work, also earthquakes, volcanoes and statistical interpretation as well. This is worth 80 marks. You answer 10 out of 12 in the first section. And I often say to my students, it's a good way to sort of get into the paper. They're shorter questions. You can fill in the blanks. You match up different things. You read bodies of text and decipher them. The map work is key, though, because there'll be at least two, if not three questions on map work in that section. So that should take about 20 minutes as the first section. Then you're going into part two. This has four different parts to it. The first part is physical geography, where you have three parts to a question. They're split into A, B and C. So the A part is more skills based. You could have a sketch map to do. You could get an infographic or a body of text to decipher answers from and to answer on. That's 20 marks. Then the B and C's are more examinations of topics. They're delving more deeper into topics like earthquakes, volcanoes, isostasy and the such like. You'd be looking to write about a page, maybe two pages onto that. So we're quite significant in terms of the amount of text you're trying to get in. Ultimately, the students are trying to get 15 SRPs, which are significant relevant points. It's a fact. They're factual pieces of information. They can be a statistic. They can be a process, things like that to get those marks. So they're 30 marks adding up to 80 for they do one question in this section, but they can also actually do two, given the accommodations that are still in place since the COVID-19 pandemic.
OK, so
the next.
Yeah, go ahead.
The second section then is on regional geography. This is a fascinating topic because you do a number of different countries in the world. You have Ireland, Brazil, India, the Paris Basin in France and the Mezzogiorno in Italy as well. Same layout here. You've A, B and C with the skills based section in part A. You could do a sketch map of the area that you're talking about. And again, B's and C's are going to be more of an examination of a topic.
OK, so part one, then the 12 short questions. You say that the examiners here are looking for more than just definitions. They require interpretations. Tell me about that.
So, yeah, I suppose what you're looking for really is, for example, in a volcanoes question, you might get a diagram that's not labelled but has arrows pointing to it. And you'd have to fill in the blanks on that one. Other ones, then you might have statistical interpretation, where you get a body of text and it would talk about maybe an earthquake or something like that, and have a lot of different information regarding that. Also, you could have maybe population with statistics on that, and then they would ask you to critically evaluate what you're reading and to actually put in a bit more detail as to what you see in the text. And then the last question in these, there's usually four questions, these kind of questions. The last one is usually your opinion on something, whereas the first three would be something that you've read in the text previous. So it's not just about definitions. It's certainly more about you showing what you know about the topic in a bit more detail than people might realise.
Then for part two, the first section, the physical environment, what kind of maps should you be familiar with and how should you be practicing for this section?
Well, you'll be given an ordnance survey map and an aerial photograph with your paper. They usually ask you to do a sketch map of the ordnance survey map in this section here. So it could be any town or a built up area or a rural area, even for that matter, in anywhere in Ireland. And you could be asked to draw it to half scale. If the question is asking you to half scale, then you literally just have to draw it half the size you're given it on. It's an A4 sheet size they give you. So you literally draw it to that half size to that. And then just they'll ask you to put in four or five different things, like a river or a railway station or an area of high ground. What's crucial here is accuracy and annotation. So by accuracy, I mean putting that area of high ground in the right area of the map and labelling exactly what you're drawing. You can use colour here, plenty of different colours, but I would usually advise my students to be as accurate as they can using a combination of pencil and colours. But the annotation and the labelling is key here to make sure they get full marks on it. And they have to put a little key or a legend at the bottom to say what the blue colour represents, maybe a river, or what the black line means, maybe a railway line or something along those lines. But accuracy and annotation here is going to be key.
OK, and then the second section is regional geography, where you're asked about different parts of the world. So what kind of things are people typically asked here to do?
There's a number of different regions that are studied. Take, for example, the Paris Basin. You have also the Mercosur, Brazil, India and Ireland, of course. They're examined from a number of different perspectives. So you would have climate and relief be one area that they'd focus on. Then they'd move on to primary economic activities, secondary economic activities, tertiary economic activities, and then population dynamics. So whatever region that you're talking about, all of those areas are going to be discussed. Some of them will be in primary in the Mezzogiorno, or you might have the secondary in Paris Basin. They'll mix it up. There's no guarantee to say primary in Brazil is going to be on it, for example. So you will just quite simply have to know the topics, I'm afraid.
Okay.
And there will be a sketch map of an area as well. It could be any one of them as well.
OK, and I mentioned tariffs there, and this is where the third section. These can be elective, but they're very topical. So talk to me what typically is asked here.
So when you're looking at this here, the same layout is going to be A, B and C. The more skills-based part is A, where you get maybe six or seven short questions to answer on a body of text or an infographic. Then B and C are the essay-based questions with the examinations of the topic. Typically, what will come up here will be things on globalisation, multinational corporations. So to go back to your tariffs excerpt there of Donald Trump, you're looking at the American corporations that have set up shop in Ireland as a result of the low corporation tax rate. So you're looking at the EU policies behind that, the tariffs that have been introduced by Trump recently, which are going to be returned in kind by Europe, as I understand it. Colonialism, you're looking at renewable energies, location of industry. They will also link in the aerial photograph and the ordnance survey map here as well to maybe ask you questions like, where would you set up a multinational corporation in the area shown on the map or on the photograph and things like that. So again, it's about 15 SRPs as well here, Maura, where you're looking to get 15 SRPs of those in factual piece of information, geographical phrases, processes and statistics, really. So statistics would be key here. For example, the corporation tax rate of 12.5% recently gone up to 15% in Ireland, and how that contrasts with other European countries and on a global scale also.
And then the fourth section is the human environment. What's meant by that?
So humans is a study of people, demographics, population sizes, where people live, where people don't live as well. All of these kind of things, urban land use, rural land use, where people are choosing to use land for what different reasons they're using them for. Again, it's the same thing here. You've skills based for A, examination of a topic for B and C, more detail in the last two sections there. But it's mainly population dynamics, urban change, and rural population in urban areas too.
Okay. Andy, you're throwing a lot of stuff at me there. So what should I study between now and June?
It's a very broad-ranging topic, as you well know. What I would advise students to do is to pick their favourite topics and know them very, very well. So if physical geography is your niche, then you should be looking to look at earthquakes, volcanoes, isostasy, mass movement and things like that. If regional is the area you like, pick the area that you like the best out of the ones I've listed previous and know that inside out as well. And do that for every different section within the paper, because what you'll find is if you do that, you'll be able to write more on that topic because it seems to be something that interests you. And invariably, you'll be able to write more on it because it's something that you're interested in and that you're well in good knowledge of.
And what are the timings for this exam?
So, yeah, the timings are very, very significant here. You've only got 2 hours and 50 minutes, which sounds like a lot of time, but ultimately it's actually not. The short questions at the start will be about 20 minutes, I would be suggesting. Then for each long question thereafter, of which you'll be doing four, you wouldn't want to be going over 40 minutes. I would certainly be saying 35 minutes if you can for the four long questions each. That will give you maybe 5, 10, maybe even 15 minutes at the end to read over things or to answer questions that you maybe left off that you had to think about more and to put an answer in for, or add extra detail into other areas that you maybe left blank as well to make sure you beef it up to ensure the 15 SRPs are attained.
And do you need any special equipment to bring into you with this exam?
Nothing special, just your usual number of pens, pencils, ruler, calculator for different statistical interpretations as well. But timings is really going to be the crucial thing to get across to students here. The stationery is very important, obviously, as well, but to stick to the timings that you can, because if you don't, you may run out of time by the end, which is a very frequent occurrence in geography from what I've seen from my invigilating days. Supervising the exams and the Leaving Cert, you see a number of pupils writing to the end and a number leaving quite frustrated and even emotional because they haven't been able to finish the paper because certain sections took longer than they anticipated.
Okay, be strict with your timing then. And what if your map drawing skills aren't great?
As long as they're accurate and annotated, that's labelled, then you'll be fine. It doesn't have to be anything like Picasso or Monet might produce. It just has to be accurate, putting the right things that you're asked to draw in the right place on the map, and that it's labelled very clearly. You'll be given 16 marks for actually doing the mechanics of drawing this, and then you'll be given 4 marks for its overall coherence or its accuracy. So accuracy is very important, and of course you will lose marks if you don't annotate and if you don't use graph paper for these as well.
Brilliant stuff. Teacher Andy, leave us there. Finally, before we leave you this week, we are looking at maths.
Done your revision?
Oh, yes. I've concentrated on trigonometry.
I've done calculus mainly.
Oh. I believe they concentrated on calculus last year.
Oh. Oh, dear.
Mr. Bean concentrating on trigonometry there. Oh, I hated those people before exams. They were like, this is coming up. Did you study this? Oh, yeah. Well, to hear us, tell us what might be coming up is Louise Boylan from the Institute of Education. Louise, remind us, please, what is the format and duration of Maths Higher Level Paper 2?
How you doing? So Maths Paper 2 is 2.5 hours. It's in two sections, Section A, Section B. They carry equal weight, so 50% each. Section A is what we call the short questions, but they're not like short answer questions. They're just shorter than the longer questions. You have to answer 5 out of 6 there. And then in Section B, they're the longer questions. You have to answer 3 out of 4.
Okay. Section A, the drill and skill section. Yeah. Tell me about this. What are the type of questions that are typically asked here?
Yeah, so the topics that are on paper 2 are, we've got probability and statistics, which are two massive ones. Then we have geometry, which leads into coordinate geometry of the line and the circle. And then we have trigonometry, which is also enormous. So the Section A is 6 questions, and it would be a spread of all of those topics. Anything can be anywhere. They tend to kind of keep in their own lane a little bit. Like, you might have a link between probability and statistics. You wouldn't really have a link between statistics and geometry, say, right? So you might link geometry and trigonometry, and then the coordinate geometry ones would probably be linked together as well. But of the six questions, there's no agreed of what is where anything. It's a free for all. And you just go in and you do the five that you like the look of.
And there are specific areas on this exam paper for filling in your answers. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so all of the maths exam is a fill in the blanks exam. So you just get your booklet, your question is there, and then there's a space underneath the question to fill in. And it gives the students an idea as well of how much of an answer you're looking for. So if, and sometimes it's just one calculation and it's just a box and you just write in the number. Sometimes it's a whole blank page. Mm. Yeah.
What are the things that tend to come up and again every year? Like, are there any bankers that students can count on coming
up?
Well,
for paper two, something like hypothesis testing and statistics is very, very common. I won't say it's there every year, but it has been there pretty much every year. Something like trigonometry, I mean, they're absolutely going to be given a triangle where they have to find a missing side or a missing angle. So that was what I would call my students' basic skills. You have to be able to take any triangle put in front of you, find missing sides, missing angles, using all the different kind of formulae. For probability, then we've got things like Bernoulli trials, that's there quite often. Expected value can come up quite a lot. Something called the normal curve, which is in both probability and statistics, again, very, very popular with the examiner. So make sure they know that going in. With the geometry, there can be a proof. There are three proofs in the geometry. They're not there every year. I wouldn't get in a tizzy about them, but they should know them just in case one is there, because it'll be worth 15 marks maybe. And then for coordinate geometry, the line, that's quite a broad topic. Coordinate geometry, the line, the circle go hand in hand. There's a lot in there, and really anything can pop up.
Section B then is your longer questions. Mm. And these are where they're the more story-like questions. So yeah. I have one here that was asked previously. It's John bought a car years ago. The table below gives an estimate of the probability that each of the following three events will happen to John's car in the next year. So they're talking about things like the head gasket blows, the timing belt goes, and air filters break. Now, important thing to stress here is you don't need to know what a head gasket is. You just need to know the probability of what it will, if it will blow up or not.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's a big thing for this exam, is because a lot of the questions in Section B are in a story, particularly the statistics questions. And the students really need to not be thrown off by whatever's the story. Like in this, as you say, something about a timing belt and a head gasket. It doesn't matter if they don't know what those terms are. They just need to work through to look at what information do I have? What information do I want? How can I link those two things?
Okay. Andy was mentioning there how important timing is in geography. In maths is a similar case, that you can only should spend a certain amount of time on each question.
Yeah, definitely. So you've got two sections. As I say, they carry equal marks. So in your section A, you're doing five questions. A general rule of thumb for the maths is your time on your question should be half of the marks for the question. So a 30 mark question, you're looking at 15 minutes, but that's the absolute upper end of how much you should allow. So what I would say is 12 minutes for each of the questions in section A. That gives you a full hour because it's five questions at 12 each. For section B, you're doing three questions, aim for 20 minutes each. Then that gives you half an hour to spare at the end to go back, fill in bits that you missed. What they really need to be careful of is not to get bogged down in a question. If a question is starting to get hard and the maths is getting very messy, it's only going to be worth a couple of marks. So just cut and run, go to the next question, start picking up marks on the next question. Then if you have time at the end, come back.
And when it comes to picking up marks, it's very important to show your work, how you got to an answer. Tell me about that.
It's extremely important. And it's even written in the marking scheme that full marks may not be awarded if work is not shown. So they have to show where everything is coming from. So that could be writing down a formula, putting the numbers into the formula, but they just can't pluck an answer out of thin air. And some of them might be inclined, particularly if it's a formula, to just pick up the calculator and throw all the numbers into the calculator and write down the answer that they get. But if the examiner can't see where that answer came from, they may not get full marks.
Are there other things to watch out for in section two?
just to keep your energy up, you know, and to and to keep going. There's sometimes are the questions within the one question might be linked. So maybe you're looking to find something in part A and then you have to carry that on to part B. But then oftentimes as you keep going, it'll be like a fresh start. So you get to part C. Now you don't need anything that was in A and B to keep going. And I just, it's really important that the students don't get disheartened if they're traveling through a question and they suddenly get stuck and they think, oh gosh, I'm not sure what that bit means. Some of them can be inclined to go, okay, that's it, I'm going to ditch question seven, but just keep going because it's often a fresh start and you don't need prior information to continue on with the question. But yeah.
And then paper one is going to be on the Friday. Paper two is going to be on the Monday. You're quite adamant here. Don't spend your weekend doing a postmortem of paper one.
Absolutely. This is hugely important. And we've seen it year on year. And what I always say to mine, don't let your paper one experience affect your paper two performance. That's really, really important. So if they have a paper one on the Friday and say it's tricky, first of all, it's tricky for everybody in the country, right? Yeah. So if you come out and I say to mine, if you come out and you're crying and everybody's crying, you're laughing because it's grand. They have to tweak the marking scheme and it'll be fine if everybody's crying. If you're the only one crying, maybe just put the head down. Yeah. But if paper one is tricky or challenging or there's a few bits in there where you go, oh, I didn't quite get that bit, just let it go. It doesn't, just leave it. It's done. You can't go back in time. There's nothing to be gained by overthinking it over the weekend. And, you know, we hear this anecdotally every year. Oh, she spent all the whole weekend crying because paper one was so hard. And then they didn't really put in much time for paper two because they were too busy fixating on what happened in paper one. So whether paper one was too hard, let it go. If it was a nice, lovely paper, don't sit back and go, sure, that's grand, then paper two is going to be a doddle. It doesn't work that way, right? Mm-hmm. They're written by two different people for a start. So it doesn't work that way. So just take them as two separate exams. They just do need to be prepared that there can be a little bit of crossover, you know, so, and some things to look out for. So say paper one, trigonometry graphs will often be there in paper one. If they do paper one and there's no trigonometry graphs, then I may put a little bit of attention to that for paper two because they're a common topic. If it wasn't on paper one, it might be on paper two. Sometimes little bits of calculus will pop up on paper two as well. It might just pop in for 5 marks or 10 marks. So just to make sure as well, they don't like empty their heads over the weekend and wash out all their paper one stuff because something can pop up on paper two that was on paper or that wasn't on paper one.
You're also saying that people should note that paper two is a morning exam. Tell me about why they should know that.
Yeah, this is super important. So the paper one exam is on the Friday afternoon. Paper two is on Monday morning. So they literally bookend the weekend. So it's very important because anecdotally that there, if you have only one exam and you're not really paying full attention on that morning, I have heard of students who have thought just the exam was on the afternoon because paper one was on the afternoon. So it must be on the afternoon. And then suddenly wake up and it's 10 o'clock and realize they've missed their paper two. It has happened 100%.
And you don't get let into the exam hall if you're late.
No. I was only saying this to my students. I said, it's not like going to a concert. You can't just rock up when it suits you. You know, you have to be there. The doors are closed. You can't be causing disruption. You have to be there when it starts. I think there's a 5 minute leeway, something like that, to come in. Okay. And that's it. Done.
Okay. Well, yeah. Then make sure your alarm is set. Maybe set an extra alarm
And have the timetable on the fridge. I liked it. And make sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. That is great advice. Thank you so much. That's it for this week's Study Hub. Thanks to Shane DePuer, Louise Boylan and also Andy Leavis in Cork. Next week, we'll be looking at English Paper 2, Home Economics and Chemistry. And if you want to get in touch with the podcast or have any questions you want answered, drop us an email to studyhub@rte.ie. See you next week. 5, 6.